This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
How do you do it? Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والعدوان إلا على الظالمين والعاقبة للمتقين اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على عبدك ورسولك محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما كثيرا. إن شاء الله تعالى we are blessed to be back in session with our beloved Sheikh Jamaz Rabozo. إن شاء الله تعالى will be presenting on the subject of e-currency, cryptocurrency, crypto mining, and NFTs, inshallah. Specifically, inshallah, Sheikh Jamal will be speaking about the fifth perspective on cryptocurrencies, inshallah ta'ala. فليتفضل مشكورا.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على نبي محمد وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمد عبده ورسوله أما بعد. So inshallah in today's session inshallah or this session inshallah we'll be covering as you see on the screen. By the way, I never use in all my classes I never use PowerPoint. In fact, I refuse to use PowerPoint, but unfortunately the powers at Amjad are stronger than me, so I apologize if I'm not looking very comfortable with using the PowerPoint. But we so the topic of e-currency or cryptocurrency and crypto mining and NFTs, as you can see, they are covered actually in three of the papers in your packet. Unfortunately, I don't have the page numbers like the earlier sheikhs had. But we had one paper by Mustafa Omar and by Sheikh Mustafa Omar and Sheikh Omar Khan, in which part of their paper they discuss cryptocurrency as well as NFTs. And then also the paper by Abdul Bari Mash'al also covers cryptocurrency and NFTs as well. And then my paper, the last paper there you see on the screen, my paper is just about cryptocurrency. But inshallah, this presentation will also cover the NFTs as well. And inshallah, the next session is actually an open session where Sheikh Omar Khan and also Sheikh Dr. Abdul Bari Mash'al will be here to answer also any questions that you might have as well, inshallah. So so there's a lot of controversy about cryptocurrency. And in particular, whether or not cryptocurrency is halal or it's not halal. I mean, that's obviously the biggest question that people want to ask about cryptocurrency. Early on, because I happen to come from an area in California close to Silicon Valley where we have a lot of high-tech people, I happen to know a few brothers who made thousands and thousands of dollars on Bitcoin before ever even asking the question whether or not this might be halal or not, which unfortunately sometimes happens. So finally, and of course, by the way, it's almost always the case that technology and real life is always ahead of law and basically like legal analysis. So the thing appears, and then you have the laws coming later, and then you have people analyzing it as to what needs to be done, what's the proper perspective with respect to these items. That's true with respect to law as a whole, any legal system. I mean, even the government of the United States, they Bitcoin was around and they had no idea, you know, how to deal with it. Is it a currency, is it asset, and so forth. So the fact that from a fiqh perspective, sometimes we're also lagging a little bit, again, this is natural. I mean, things appear first before in general, things appear first before the questions are asked about how we should deal with it from a legal perspective. So the question of cryptocurrency, which basically cryptocurrency, you can think of it as a type of money. It is a type of money. So the analysis of it from the perspective of from the Sharia perspective, basically all goes back to questions related to money. What is money from a Sharia perspective, and so forth. So first, I'm going to start by speaking a little bit about money from what you could call an economics or a secular perspective. And usually when people speak about money, they usually talk about something that serves basic purposes, such as what they call a medium of exchange. Medium of exchange. Basically what that means is that if I want to buy something from you, you're willing to take this thing that we call money in exchange for what you have. So before money became common, you know, for example, if you had a car that I wanted, well, I'd have to look at my stuff. Let's say like I have an older car, and maybe I have a computer, maybe I have one of Omar Suleiman's books, whatever. So I put them all together as a package, and I say, hey, are you willing to give me your car for this? This is what they call barter. So the whole idea of money basically made the idea of transactions and business and basically economy made it much easier. You know, we don't have to have what they call a double coincidence of wants, that basically, do you want my car and my stuff in exchange for your car? We have something common between us that we're all willing to accept. That's the main purpose and the main goal behind money, right? To facilitate business exchange of goods, and basically I'm going to get something from you, whether it is a good, you know, like a book, or whether it is a computer, or even renting a property. And there's something that you're willing to accept as payment. So that's one of the main purposes and benefits also of money. Also, it's just what they call a store value. I mean, you can keep it. Other things, for example, may not be that easy to keep. If all your wealth, for example, is in fish, let's say, if you keep fish for too long, it's going to get rotten. It's not going to be very effective. But you can keep money. You can store money someplace. So it's a store of value for and so forth. And so historically speaking, in different cultures, lots of different things played the role of money. You know, nowadays, for example, we usually look at the bills that we have, but probably you can imagine in the time of the Prophet ﷺ, we had dinars and dirhams. We had money which was based on gold and money which was based on silver. And gold and silver, these are two of the common foundations of money, you can say, what money is. Oftentimes gold and silver plays the role of money, or even if you have paper money, many times it's backed by either gold or silver, what they call the gold standard or the silver standard. But again, as I said, over time, a lot of times different things like certain types of seashells were used as money in many different cultures. If you happen to be in prison, inshallah none of you right now are in prison, but in prison, things like cigarettes, for example, cigarettes play the role of money in prison, because it's things that people want and they're willing to accept, and because they know that other people are also willing to accept it in exchange for goods. So if you have something that you know that other people are willing to accept in exchange for their goods, basically that thing is going to be playing the role of money. And that's what money is from a secular perspective. That thing which basically people are willing to accept in exchange for goods or services. People are willing to accept. And it doesn't matter if that thing is based on nothing. In other words, for example, the United States dollar, for example. The United States dollar right now is backed by absolutely nothing. You cannot go, for example, to the United States government and say, look, I think the dollar is going to go down. I want to exchange my dollar for gold. Now, if you go to the United States government and want to exchange a $100 bill, they'll give you a $100 bill in exchange. Because it's not based on anything. The only reason it is out there is, again, people have confidence in it. People are accepting it. Actually, the bulk of the money, there's something called the money supply, which is basically the entire amount of money. If you count up, for example, all the dollar bills in your pocket and all the coins that are out there, and then if you count out all the money that people have in their bank accounts, then you get this thing called the money supply. And the bulk of the money supply nowadays, it is created by the banks. It's created by the banks, not created by the federal government. Basically, somebody goes to a bank. When somebody goes to the bank and says, for example, I want to borrow $1 million. The bank doesn't say, okay, let me go to my vault and see if I have $1 million. They don't do that. They say, what's your name? What's your account number? Okay, I'll write in $1 million. There, you have $1 million. That's it. And now there's $1 million in the money supply. That's how money is created. That's how so the American dollar has nothing behind it. The bulk of it, as I said, if you look at the percentage of the money supply, what is created by the banks, the bulk of it is what has been created by the banks, just by an accounting entry. Interestingly, by the way, obviously those loans that they make, I mean, obviously they're going to charge interest. So that means the American dollar, you know, the bulk of it is actually a debt ribawi-based system. It's actually a debt ribawi-based system. And yet, of course, most everybody uses the dollar, including our ulama and shuyukh. They all use the dollar. Our governments all use the dollar, even though that's where the dollar comes from. So that's money from a secular perspective. That's the money that we are dealing now with in the secular economies that we are dealing with. So an important question, obviously, is whether or not what should be money and what we can accept as being money, does the Sharia have something else to say about it? In other words, for example, these dollars, for example, again, the process in which the bulk of them are created, obviously, is problematic. But even the idea of a dollar or a currency that has nothing to back it up, for example, is this acceptable? Are there some conditions, for example, that the Sharia puts in order for money to be considered sound money, correct money from a Sharia perspective? And much of the debate surrounding cryptocurrency and those shuyukh and ulama who came out with fatwas saying that that cryptocurrency is not halal, they are basing their fatwas, at least in the majority of the cases when they have some evidence behind it, they are basing those fatwas on the idea that cryptocurrency does not meet the Sharia definition of money, and it is not acceptable as money. So basically in their minds, they're saying that the Sharia has certain criteria in order for money to be considered money. And if those criteria are not met, then basically whatever it is you're talking about, whether you're talking about cryptocurrency or something else, then that cannot be considered as money and should not be treated as money and so forth. So you do get, as I said, you actually, in my paper, I discuss or I mention and I refer to those scholars who have come to the conclusion that cryptocurrency is not halal. And as I said, the basis of their opinions as to why cryptocurrency is not halal is going to come back to this question of what is acceptable money and what isn't acceptable money. So I don't know how long I've spoken already, but I haven't even defined what cryptocurrency is, but I guess it's okay. So cryptocurrency, what is cryptocurrency? Or actually better, maybe, what are cryptocurrencies? So I got a definition from Wikipedia. I mean, what? Where else to go, right, than Wikipedia? And it's there on the screen. a digital currency. A digital currency is designed to work as a medium of exchange through a computer network that is not reliant on any central authority, such as a government or bank, to uphold or maintain it. So basically, what does that mean? In the financial crisis in 2008, a lot of economists, they put the blame on that financial crisis on the banks, and also the government and their interaction with these banks and the laws related to these banks. And so somebody came up with this idea of why don't we design a system where basically people can essentially define their own currency and be able to pay each other directly, what they call peer-to-peer. Pay each other directly without ever having to worry about a central bank, a central authority or a governmental authority. So as I said before, anything could be used as money. If we agree, for example, here that these pens that we got from Amjad, we'll use that as money. Okay. So some of you, mashallah, might have taken three of them instead of just one, so you might have more money than somebody else. So now if you want to buy something, you could use that. Basically, we could create our own within this room, like what, as I said, in prisons, they do this all the time. We could create our own monetary system. As long as we are willing to accept whatever it is we have determined as a method of payment, we can do it. And that's essentially what they did, coming up with Bitcoin. They came up with this idea that basically we're going to create this new currency that they call Bitcoin, and we're going to be able to use this. You know, we have a platform and so forth, a network. We're going to be able to use this to pay one another for different items. And if anybody wants to join us, if anyone wants to accept these bitcoins, you know, all they do is have to basically go online, create a wallet, and say, I'm willing to accept these bitcoins. And that's basically the birth of cryptocurrency. So a white paper came out basically that explains exactly how the system is going to work, and explains exactly how new coins are going to be, quote-unquote, minted. Of course, they're not actually minted. When Bitcoins first came out, I used to make a joke of pulling out a coin and say, have you ever seen a Bitcoin before? Of course, there's no such thing as a physical Bitcoin. If somebody is selling you a physical Bitcoin, you're being scammed. I hope you realize that. Otherwise, I have some in my room. I forgot to bring them with me. They happen to be chocolate inside, but... Okay, so they say again. They set up the system where they could buy whatever they want from each other using this form of money. And this white paper described, for example, how are new coins going to be entered into the system, because that's a problem, right? You can't have money and the money is like free or everywhere and anyone can just create their own money. That obviously there's a problem. So they came up with a rather complicated system and said, basically, this is what we're going to do in order to create new coins and basically give people new coins. And they call it mining. They call that mining. They wanted to use a word that sounds like, you know, when they used to get gold, mining for gold and so forth, that's kind of clever of them, but anyway, so that's, so all of this is spelled out. Actually, this is as open and as transparent a monetary system you can imagine. I mean, the banking system of the United States and how they create money, all the details and all the laws of it takes up books and books. This is a small, like, 15-page paper that describes this entire system of how we're going to create this currency. And then other people came along and said, that's a great idea. You know, we have our own platform, in other words, like our own network. We're going to create our own currency as well. All you need is basically people to buy into it. And so if there are some people, especially if these people are like famous in the IT area, and they come out with a white paper, they say, look, we're going to produce also a currency, a cryptocurrency. This is how it's going to work. And so people see that and they get interested in it. And if they trust the source, they might give them money even before the coin comes out. This is the initial coin offering. They know that the coins are going to come out, so they give them money now to start another cryptocurrency. A lot of times, by the way, these are scams. People say they're going to produce a cryptocurrency, they get money from people, and nothing ever gets produced. That has happened quite a bit, and recently there was an article just a couple of days ago where somebody was able to, he was doing it as a test, and in just a couple hours he was able to get $100,000 from people to create a new currency. And now there are actually literally thousands and thousands of cryptocurrencies out there. Something in the area of about 20,000, if I remember correctly, or something, some ridiculously high number like that. There's different market cap and other websites that you can go and see all of these listed. So we're talking about literally thousands and thousands of different types of cryptocurrency. The most famous one is Bitcoin. Then probably the second most famous one is something called Ethereum. And Ethereum has been in the news a lot lately for reasons that I will comment on later, inshallah. So basically, the different papers that you have, they discuss the fiqh arguments against the permissibility or the halalness. You know, sometimes I make up words in English, but hopefully they're clear, right? The halalness of cryptocurrency. There's actually a lot of, especially if you go like on YouTube and stuff like that, and see all the different videos that are out there, and the different people who are speaking against cryptocurrency, they present actually a large number of arguments. I tried to cover as many of them as I could in the paper. And in my paper, and also Dr. Mash'al also discusses a number of them, and Sheikh Omar and Khan, not to be confused with Sheikh Omar Khan by himself, they also discussed a number of those arguments as well. So basically, what they're trying to say is that from a fiqh perspective, cryptocurrency is not acceptable as a type of money. So in other words, money in the Sharia has certain requirements that must be met. If you look at Bitcoin, I'm just going to use Bitcoin as an example, and in some ways it could stretch to other than Bitcoin. But basically the argument is that if you look at Bitcoin and if you think about what is the Sharia requirements for money, they're going to make the argument that that Bitcoin does not meet the Sharia requirements for money. Which sounds plausible, but the problem is we have to look at all of these conditions that they put and actually ask the question, is this true? Does the Sharia actually lay down such requirements for money? So for example, one of the common arguments that you hear against Bitcoin by different fuqaha is that it doesn't have a governmental source. It does not have a governmental source, right? It is private, as we described, right? It's actually the whole purpose of it. The whole purpose of it is to be outside of the system. That's the whole purpose of it. So obviously it doesn't have a governmental source, right? But the question is, is this necessary in order for something to be accepted by money from a Sharia perspective? Is this necessary in order for something to be considered money from a Sharia perspective? Now, if you go to the time of the Prophet ﷺ, in the time of the Prophet ﷺ, in Medina, in Mecca, but in Medina in particular, they are using dirhams and dinars. So dirhams and dinars, the dinars and dirhams that they were using, they were produced by a government. The Byzantine and the Persian governments, this is the coins that the Arabs were actually using. Foreign, original case of foreign exchange, I guess. Right? They were using these coins, right, which actually came from a foreign land. The Prophet ﷺ himself, during the lifetime of the Prophet ﷺ, we have no evidence, we have no sign, right, that he considered it necessary that him, the Prophet ﷺ, and his companions as a state, for example, take over the minting of coins and produce their own coins. They did not do that, right? Not only did they not do that, but also all of the Khulafa al-Rashideen, they also did not do that as well. During this entire time, none of them produced coins. It wasn't until the time of the Umayyads that we basically have the first Islamic coin and the first Islamic mint. Now, what does that mean with respect to what we're saying here? So if the argument is that it must come from a government source, so the Prophet ﷺ, in his time, yes, we had Persian, we had Byzantine. Obviously, these are not Islamic sources. These are not Islamic sources, but they are government as such. But the Prophet ﷺ himself did not insist on producing or minting coins or being basically the source of money, and basically accepted the money that was out there. And as I said, the Khulafa al-Rashidin also did the same. So basically, we don't have any proof from the Prophet ﷺ. We don't have any proof from the Prophet ﷺ that money must have a governmental source. That money must have a governmental source. It is true that, yeah, it did have at that time. It did have at that time, but this is not evidence in itself that it must be coming from a governmental source. And there's some narrations also that people use from Umar that are not necessarily authentic from his time, of using something even other than gold and silver during his time. But this is, as I said, this is one of the arguments that is presented. The counter argument to that, basically, I mean, obviously the Persian government, the Byzantine government, these are not Islamic governments. These are, you know, they are involved in kufr and so forth. And so to argue that any government, it has to come from a government or any government, this sounds also kind of like a strange argument as well. But the point is that there is definitely no direct evidence, no clear evidence that for something to be considered money and to be dealt with as money, that it has to come from a governmental source. Secondly, they also argue, I'm going to try to go through these pretty quickly, that cryptocurrency, and I mentioned who of the different authors also mentioned these, cryptocurrency doesn't have any intrinsic value. So like gold and silver are basically like desired in and of themselves. And now if you look at cryptocurrency actually has nothing intrinsic to it that has any kind of value to it. The dollar, for example, as I said, is not backed by anything. You could maybe argue that it doesn't have any intrinsic value, although maybe people will say the confidence that people have in it is its value. Okay. But if they're going to make an argument like that, then with respect to this platform and this network, then the confidence that people have in cryptocurrency within this network, of Bitcoin, for example, that is its intrinsic value. Another common argument, as I said, probably I'm not going to go through all these, is that basically, it doesn't have a governmental source, and also it's not legal tender. In other words, no government or the governments have not declared it as legally to be used as money. There's actually a couple of countries, by the way, in the world that have actually adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. Unfortunately for one of them, El Salvador, hasn't turned out very well for them. The past, for almost 1 year, they've used Bitcoin as legal tender. But again, the evidence that a government has to proclaim it legal tender, There's also no evidence for that from the Sharia perspective. I think from the ones that are more commonly heard are things like the fact that the price of Bitcoin is very volatile. And there's a lot of speculation going on with respect to Bitcoin. And this is absolutely true. I mean, if you look at Bitcoin for a long time, the price was actually very stable. And other factors led to people getting interested in it, and the price of it has been very volatile. And a lot of people are speculating in it, and many people, actually percentage-wise, probably more people are using it, percentage-wise, people are more using it as a speculative measure than anything else. The problem with these two arguments is that has nothing to do, right? The fact that the price has been volatile, the fact that people have been using it for speculatory purposes, that has actually nothing to do with the nature of the cryptocurrency itself. So as I said, Bitcoin, for a long time, the price was stable. How people all of a sudden now turn to a currency and then make it unstable, that doesn't affect the fact that it is money, it was money before, and it's still money. I mean, if you look at the Turkish lira recently, for example, it has been very unstable and it has lost lots of value. Many currencies sometimes lose lots of value or they go up and down. This doesn't negate the fact that these are currencies. They are still money. No one's going to doubt, for example, that the Turkish lira is money. So again, the volatility doesn't disprove it as money. It may not be very good money. I mean, if you want money, if you're going to hold any kind of money, you want that money to be stable. So it may not work very well as money under some circumstances, but at the same time, it is still money. Some of the early stocks, by the way, in IT, some of the early stocks had the same kind of history that Bitcoin has had with respect to the price of the stock and so forth. Maybe things will stable out over time, or maybe the whole thing will crash, one or the other. See, either one of those is very possible. And the same is true also if people are using it for speculatory reasons. I mean, people buy euros, for example, people buy dollars for all the time for speculatory reasons. But usually, you know, what they can buy and how much they can buy is not going to affect the price of the dollar or euro very much. Not too long ago, a couple of brothers tried to, not Muslim brothers, I think, a couple of siblings tried to corner the silver market. These kind of things can happen, but it doesn't. Again, these things, people are speculating in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. That doesn't negate the fact that these things are still currencies. Similarly, some people point out the fact that there's a lot of criminal activity that has been taking place with respect to Bitcoin. Especially, it has been used a lot in the dark web and so forth. That was probably true earlier on. Now there's many more regulations in which that's much more difficult to do nowadays. But again, using something for criminal activity doesn't mean that the thing itself must be haram. Because again, keep in mind that your local drug dealer, hopefully you don't have a local drug dealer, but keep in mind that your local drug dealer, right, the number one thing that your local drug dealer wants is cash. They deal in cash, right? They're not going to take your credit card, right, and run your credit card. Of course, if it was Amjad, probably it wouldn't work, right, Sadiq? He's not paying attention, either intentionally or whatever, he's not paying attention. So again, these people are dealing in cash, and criminals deal in cash, you know, pretty much a lot. Right? So that criminal activity doesn't make cash haram. So similarly, you know, people are using Bitcoin and other things illegally. That in itself doesn't, again, make the currency itself forbidden. And then also, especially with respect to Bitcoin. So essentially what we're going to see is one of the common argument, or one of the common responses, and actually all three of the papers they pretty much have the same common response. And that is that basically, the default ruling concerning anything is that of permissibility. So the default ruling, basically the default ruling of Bitcoin should be permissible or halal unless you can prove otherwise. But that condition of, or that idea of the default ruling of anything is permissibility, actually that is conditional. It is the default ruling of anything that might be beneficial is permissible. The default ruling of anything which is harmful is not going to be permissible. And so especially with respect to Bitcoin, we haven't spoken about the mining very much and how that works. Inshallah, we'll speak about that shortly. But mining takes up a lot of energy, And so the Biden administration just 2 days ago, it's leaked out that the Biden administration is basically thinking about putting a ban on what they call proof of work, which is how Bitcoin is mined, right? Because all of the energy that it takes up. So from the point of view of climate change, from the point of view of the health of the world as a whole, and even the health of local communities, the effect of Bitcoin, and especially the effect of the mining that is done, it could have a very, very negative effect. So just like, for example, they were talking about cultured meats earlier. You know, if someday it's discovered that cultured meats are very bad for your health. So basically, that fact that it's bad for your health, let's say like very bad for your health, not like processed meats, which apparently people don't have an issue with, but cultured meats. If it turns out that those are like really bad for your health, like for example, and Sheikh Omar Khan gave this example earlier, like smoking, how the fatwa changed for smoking. You know, so even if something, let's say, starts off and we think that it is permissible, if we actually find that it is very harmful, then the ruling has to change to that of prohibition. And that is a big problem and an issue that needs to be looked into with respect to Bitcoin. But of course, Bitcoin is just a specific type of cryptocurrency. And the model that Bitcoin uses is not the same that is used by everyone else. The second most important, or the second with respect to market capitalization, the second largest cryptocurrency is Ethereum. And Ethereum has been going through this big thing that they call the merge. Just today they finished one of their last tests to go from what they call proof of work to proof of stake. So they're basically changing the entire system for Ethereum of how you create new money. And as a process, as a result of that, they expect that their energy consumption is going to drop by 99%. So Bitcoin, as I said, as an example, there's no question that Bitcoin could be very harmful to environment, especially in the long run. By the way, there's some articles that say, no, the opposite of the case. They are like using energy that most people don't use anyway and so forth. But it looks like as a whole, it might be very harmful in the long run. And that is something, I mean, of all the arguments against Bitcoin in particular, again, not cryptocurrency, but of all the arguments against Bitcoin, that's probably one of the strongest arguments. Okay. By the way, I've never seen this this PowerPoint presentation. They did add something to it, mashallah. So those who say the permissibility of cryptocurrency is permissible. So again, cryptocurrency, the idea, and what I mean by that, the idea behind that is basically developing our own kind of currency, developing a network or platform Well, we're going to identify some kind of currency or some kind of form of money that we are going to accept among ourselves as a kind of money. So basically, the essence of that and the idea of that, there doesn't seem to be anything in the Sharia that would prevent that kind of thing. All of the arguments that were presented, as I mentioned before, either they don't have any basis, or maybe you could even present counter-arguments against those proofs against using cryptocurrency as any kind of money. So basically all three of the speakers went back to this, all three of the articles went back to this idea that the default ruling is that of permissibility. And of course, that is dependent upon... what? Are you sure? This is not... okay. Oh, you mean... Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. I won't worry about it. Okay. So from there, basically, if you look at cryptocurrency and the different kinds of cryptocurrency, there's still some important points, though, that need to be mentioned. Number one is the type of activity that you are going to be involved in. You know, simply like making a payment. Let's say, like you want to make a payment to someone overseas, it might be easier for you to switch your dollars into cryptocurrency, to Bitcoin, for example, and send it and so forth. This is what is known as using it as a payment rail. Probably there's nothing wrong with that. As Dr. Mashal mentions, also each cryptocurrency is going to have a white paper, and basically that white paper is going to describe the actual workings of the cryptocurrency, and that's where you can analyze that maybe something is questionable there, maybe there's some ribawi aspect and so forth within that model. And it's very important to point out. It's very important to point out that when we say, when those writers say that it is permissible, this in no way should be considered any kind of idea that it's okay to or encourage you to invest in Bitcoin or anything like that. All the papers pretty much agree that you're not supposed to speculate on money. Money has a very distinct purpose in the Sharia. If you misuse it, if you abuse it, it can cause great harm to people. People rely on money. So once people start speculating on money, you actually are then affecting essentially their purchasing power. Maybe what their whole life savings are worth anymore. So it is not permissible as a whole, and the idea of speculating and using money to make money, this is something that the Sharia scholars as a whole have stated is impermissible. Besides the idea of buying Bitcoin and so forth, then there's also the idea of mining Bitcoin, or in the case of others, what they call staking. And so basically mining is essentially, so what they do is they're trying to figure out some way to make it difficult, but at the same time make it possible to create new coins. So essentially they create puzzles, and basically different computers are going to try to solve this puzzle. It's basically going to be a unique number, very long unique number. And so essentially, who's going to be able to solve it? The more computer power you have, and I have a picture in my paper of a computer mining place where, you have a stack, the whole large building is just computers, basically mining coins. So the first computers that are able to solve that puzzle, they are the ones who are basically going to have the right to validate that exchange and so forth. I don't want to go into the detail of blockchain and all that, but basically they're going to be then, the reward for that is they're going to get a Bitcoin in exchange. So basically the more computer power you have, the better your odds are at solving the puzzle, but it's not going to be the case, there's some randomness that it's not going to be the case that, whoever has the biggest computer power is always going to be solving the puzzle. It's structured in such a way that that's not going to be the case. So there is some randomness, there is some risk involved. So some people might say, like, this is like gambling. This is like gambling, you know, you're putting up all this computer power and you may win, you may not win, basically. But actually, Dr. Mashal addressed this, also I addressed this, is more like the concept in the Sharia of ju'ala, which basically, like, if I lost my car and I say I'll pay $500 to whoever whoever finds my car, for example, then whoever ends up finding it, I'm going to pay them. This is an acceptable contract in the Sharia, and this is more like that than it is gambling. And this is mining. So mining is via proof of work. And as I said, this is what Bitcoin uses. This uses up a lot of energy. Another approach is what they call proof of stake or staking. Security-wise, mining is much stronger. I mean, the whole point of the mining, the whole point of Bitcoin is essentially to be able to protect the blockchains from basically being manipulated in any way. Staking is not as safe, but it's much less energy consuming. So basically in staking, you actually you basically put money in, you buy coins, and those coins are basically held at stake. And usually you're very restricted as to what you can do with those coins. So essentially you put money in, and the more money that you put in, then basically the greater the odds are that you're going to be chosen to validate the next node. So the more money you put in, the more likely you're going to be chosen. And if you are chosen, to validate the next blockchain, you're going to receive the coins as payment. Right? So this is perhaps problematic because you're actually putting money in order to get money in exchange. Right? The thing that you're working for. See, in the case of mining, you are actually putting your computer power in and then trying to make money as a result. Here, you're actually putting money in, essentially to make money off the money that you have put in. And also sometimes, in some cases, that money which you are staked, because the platform as a whole needs people to put, to get engaged in it. So many times, that money which is at stake, also sometimes they pay interest on it. Obviously, interest is going to be haram. So staking could be problematic on a couple of levels, even though it's much more energy efficient. And finally, the NFTs or the non-fungible tokens. This is not actually addressed in my paper. This is addressed in the Dr. Mashal and Dr. Sheikh Omar Khan and Mustafa Omar, inshallah. And by the way, the next session, inshallah, Dr. Mashal and Sheikh Omar Khan, they will be here to answer your questions, inshallah. So NFTs are unique cryptographic tokens that exist on a blockchain and cannot be replicated. So fungible basically means it's not like anything else. And this is, this NFTs, There's a lot of useful ways in which NFTs can be used. For example, the useful and also profit-making, like Pearson, for example, which publishes a lot of textbooks. They're thinking of putting their next textbooks out as NFTs. That way they can control the, if you buy a textbook and then you resell it, that way they can control that and basically get a cut out of that as well. And so basically it is, in some cases though, it is not much more than basically a one-of-a-kind digital item. One-of-a-kind digital item, many times which is just representing something else. It's not the thing itself, it is representing something else. Like sometimes it's representing a piece of art. It's not the art itself, but you actually have this code that this belongs to you. In many cases, this doesn't mean that you have the copyright. It doesn't necessarily give you any rights over the thing. You have to look very closely at the smart contract to see what are your actual rights. Because sometimes you're just buying basically for that information on that blockchain that this belongs to you. And a lot of times it's nothing much more than just like bragging rights. Right? That actually belongs to me. I don't have any copyright over it. Anybody can use it. It's still being distributed, and you can find it on the internet. But in reality, that node there, that in that blockchain, shows that it belongs to me. I can't do anything with it. And people are willing to pay millions of dollars sometimes to be able to say that. That this belongs to me. The most expensive NFT that was sold was for like $89 million. And there's a Bored Ape collection they sell for millions, you know, that these are just pictures of bored apes. I can imagine in most mosques, if someone went up to the imam and said, I'm thinking of investing in bored apes, what do you think? I just can't imagine what the response you're going to get from most imams. First of all, how do you know the ape is bored? Anyway, so as both of the papers speak about, depending on what the underlying asset is, so it is either representing an asset or something like that. So depending on what the underlying asset is, if that underlying asset is halal and is useful, then inshallah the NFT is halal. If the underlying asset is, for example, something haram, you know, whatever you can imagine that is haram, then the NFT is also going to be haram. As Dr. Mashal points out, you have to make sure that you're not just wasting money. I mean, again, just having bragging rights that says that, you know, I paid for this, and you're actually not getting any benefit from it, this could be obviously a kind of israf. And then finally, as I said, it's very important, as Sheikh Mustafa Omar and Omar Khan mentioned, it's very important that you read the smart contract to be able to determine like what kind of rights you're going to be getting, to see if it is actually something of benefit or not. Unfortunately, I don't think anyone covered the idea and the concept of smart contracts, but that is also another thing that we need to look into it. Smart contracts and so forth and other things like this are already being used in what they call Islamic fintech or Islamic financial technology. And those need also looking into as well. Wa barakallahu fikum wa assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hafizakallah, Sheikh Jamal, Jazakallah khair, kamakallah. And if anyone wants to buy Sheikh Jamal's coins from his room, you can speak to him after. His NFTs as well. Or trade your car for my books, I'm also available. But we're going to, inshallah, take a break before the Q&A. We're going to play a quick video, inshallah ta'ala, from IAMC, Indian American Muslim Council, inshallah, a short video presentation, and then we will continue with the Q&A, inshallah. Barakallahu fiqh. If anyone's at the mic so far. Yeah, we'll start with Sheikh Anwar. Bismillah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May Allah preserve you, Sheikh. I don't know if you addressed it, but there was the issue of creating a cryptocurrency, making your own. I know as you mentioned, there's thousands of cryptocurrencies out there, and new ones are coming out every day, and I get questions about people who want to make some new ones, including my own brother. all of the investors, when they address this issue, you have to prove to them that it's not a Ponzi scheme, right? That it's not a pyramid scheme. So how do you address that? Or what's the... I mean, if majority of them that are out there are Ponzi schemes, how do we get around that aspect?
So there are a number of cryptocurrencies that turned out to be Ponzi schemes. As I said, when it comes to, of course, the idea also of initial coin offerings, this has some concerns with it as well. I mentioned it in the paper, and also Sheikh Dr. Mashal mentioned a related idea, and that is that, you know, one of the issues with respect to cryptocurrency as a whole is that if I'm going to use dollars to buy cryptocurrency, and if cryptocurrency is money, of course, I didn't get into the whole debate about whether cryptocurrency is money or assets and so forth. I don't know if my speech bored you, but I definitely think that would have bored you. Anyway, but it is money. It should be considered money. And so we have very strict rules about when you're exchanging money for money, that basically it has to be a spot transaction. I cannot give you $100 now, and then after 1 week you'll give me, for example, the exchange in euros or something like that. And so this can be a problem with Bitcoin and some of the other cryptocurrencies, that there could be a time delay in getting your currency. Sometimes that time delay might be very short and maybe overlooked. They also actually have ATMs that you can get your cryptocurrency from in different parts of the United States, as long as you have a wallet, and it will go directly into that wallet. I mean, all transactions, I forget, on Bitcoin, they're actually going to be finalized like every, I think it's every 12 minutes or something. That's how they've designed the algorithm that it's going to take to solve the puzzle. So if my understanding was correct, is that maybe some brothers, I don't know where the brother went. So are you saying that some brothers want to establish their own cryptocurrency?
Yeah, they already made it. It was my brother. We talked for months. This was his COVID project. You know, like people were making bread. They made a cryptocurrency, okay. And they got, right, so people who staked money, they staked almost $500,000 into it eventually. But the hope, every single investor, the hope was that we're going to hype, right, they use that term, we're going to hype this up so that the value of the coin grows so much so that those people can eventually cash out. So it's not, they're not investing in something intrinsic, they're investing in the hope that other people will buy to evaluate, you know, to raise the value of it so that they can actually just cash out. They want dollars at the end of the day. They don't want the cryptocurrency.
Okay. All right.
If that makes sense.
So there's a difference between a Ponzi scheme, it's Ponzi scheme, and what they call pump and dump.
Right.
Where, you know, you put the currency out there and you give it a lot of hype. Like, this is going to be really something big. And as a result of that, you get people to buy into it.
Yeah.
And basically, so obviously, ethically, Islamically, ethically, and even here in the United States, ethically, this is considered improper. You are basically trying to deceive people, to get them to invest. Your only purpose in doing that is to get the price to go up, and then you will sell. If all of a sudden a number of people sell, that means the price is going to drop again.
Right.
And that's the result of the action that you've done.
Right.
So clearly that's haram from a Shia perspective.
So some cryptocurrencies will add caps. You can't sell over a certain percentage of what you own in a certain amount of period in order for the price not to drop, like you mentioned. But ultimately, I mean, the vast majority of the currencies that are available are of this nature, outside of the major ones that you covered in your paper, like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and others.
So again, with respect to Ponzi scheme, obviously, you know, one of the clear signs of a Ponzi scheme is that you are kind of like promised a reward and so forth. And Bitcoin in particular definitely doesn't meet the criteria of what you would call a Ponzi scheme, Bitcoin
right.
in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, the original owners, they seem to be still in there. And I mean, it's not like
they
were trying
sold,
to set people.
He hasn't sold any of his.
But if someone were to set, I mean, if some brothers were to set it up, they could set up a Ponzi scheme. That would be haram.
Yeah.
They could deceive people as to the value of something. All of that is obviously haram.
Jazakallah khair.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazakallah khair. As you just mentioned, like those who are creating these, they're just saying they want to avoid the system. In reality, they are also creating another system. Because when you need to apply to it, you go under someone who is leading this. But what I want to ask here is
but
two things.
But they are creating a decentralized system. Right? In other words, they are, what they're claiming is this system is filled with dhulm. Mm-hmm. We're going to create a system which doesn't have dhulm. So theoretically, nothing wrong with that.
Okay, Sheikh.
Theoretically. Speaking theoretically, you're right.
It's another system, Sheikh. Okay, you mentioned the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and all the time to the companion or the Khulafa al-Rashidun. said that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not create it like, you know, he used the dirham and dinar. So you don't think that also is a proof that is not any need to create like some of these cryptocurrency, because as Sheikh Anwar just saying, everybody trying to get his own, and then there's not going to be any security in the society. And if you just say it's halal, and then it's going to be too much. Now you just say, okay, this is halal and this way is haram. Why not just have one rule to this, because it's not really secure. And this last point, when you come now for zakat, if you say now like Bitcoin is halal, so how are you going to measure your zakat? And if it's permissible to add the Bitcoin to the gold or the money that you have to give the zakat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, there's a little bit of a echo here, so.
It's hard for us to. So he's saying, if other, the proof that the Prophet ﷺ did not create a new system of currency, with all the insecurity that exists with creating new currencies and new systems, isn't there enough room for that in and of itself to err on the side of caution? And the second thing was, how would we, if we do take these things as permissible, what does that mean in terms of zakat calculations?
So with respect to the first question, I mean, this international monetary system that we have right now, you don't have to study economics very deep to see that there's lots of problems with it, and problems in particular with respect to concepts like dhulm. It favors the powerful over the poor in many ways. And as I described with respect to how they create money now, I mean, it's debt-based, it's ribawi-based. So I think there's many ways in which you can analyze what is going on right now and point out a number of things which are not only maybe just haram, but almost borderline kind of shocking as to what the system really is right now. So if someone were to argue that this system doesn't look right, and as Muslims, we should be opposing this kind of boom, and we should maybe develop our own system. Again, theoretically, I don't think anyone can argue against the idea that there's a lot of questionable aspects with respect to the current system. There's lots of boom with respect to the current system. Obviously, it's a completely ribawi-based system as well in many aspects. So we should be, actually. We should be. Maybe it's even incumbent upon us to be looking for some kind of solution. And actually, I know a number of Muslim economists who have high hopes in things like cryptocurrency. Maybe something in the long run might turn up, inshallah. With respect to zakat, so if cryptocurrency, whatever currency you have, if it's considered money, then you deal with it as money. So just like how you pay your zakat on other monies, let's say like if you have dollars, if you have euros, and then you have Bitcoin, basically all of that is going to be added together. It's all basically like one kind of asset. All of that, the value of all that is added together. And you pay the appropriate amount, 2.5% on it, if you're above the ESAP.
So we'll go to the sisters, if any of the sisters have a question. That's fine. You want to just ask the question?
Yeah, when you use that.
Oh, you got a mic there.
Can someone invest in crypto knowing that the company deals with interest or anything that's prohibited in Islam? Like the company itself might not deal with just that, but it might also deal with that. Does that make sense?
So the question is, Can someone invest? It's hard to hear from the States. So can someone invest in a form of currency or a company with crypto that deals with interest and mixed forms of investment?
Yeah, like that's not the only thing, but it also deals with that.
So I think it's more of a question about investments then. So can a person invest their crypto into a company that has some form of haram transactions, even if that's not solely their form of transaction?
Okay, so crypto, again, it's just like any other kind of money. So just like dollars, if you have dollars and you want to invest them, then whatever company that you're going to invest it in, you have to make sure that they satisfy the Sharia parameters. Let's say like the stock market, the Dow Jones Islamic Index have come up with certain parameters. Personally, I'm not real pleased with some of those parameters that they came up with, but essentially, I mean, if the question is investing your Bitcoin into a company or something, again, it is money. So whatever the principles are with respect to if you're going to invest dollars in something, it's going to be the same with respect to cryptocurrency, if I understood the question.
What's the ruling on using cryptocurrency as a form of investment similar to stocks? So you aim at buying low, and then when the price goes up, you're selling. So you're not really into using crypto for its purpose, but using it to make money by buying and selling. And obviously, sometimes you end up buying something that never, you know, is anything, and you end up losing money.
So you're not using the microphone, right?
Thought I am.
Because okay. Because this was the first one I could hear and understand.
Oh. So you did hear me.
Barakallah, we get this clear, inshallah. So there's a big difference between investing in stock and investing in cryptocurrency or euros or whatever. So in one case, you are actually doing something which is engaged in what they call the real economy. Real economy. In other words, like producing goods and so forth. There is some output. And basically, the entire... maybe it's not the entire idea of riba, but one of the key aspects of riba is essentially you are trying to make money off of money completely divorced from the real economy. So whether you are charging, riba, if you're charging riba, clearly it's obviously not halal. But even if you are investing in money, whether it is dollars or cryptocurrency, and your whole idea is just trying to make money off of the money, completely divorced from the real economy. So this it's not riba exactly. I mean, no one could argue that it's specifically riba, but it is very much akin to riba. So you should avoid that thing.
So just, I'm sure you understand, like in cryptocurrency, pretty much all of them have a certain purpose. Be used, right, for that specific cryptocurrency. So would that be considered to say, well, I'm not really investing in money, or I'm not buying and selling money, I am buying a service, right? So, mm-hmm. So one of the cryptos, is to be used between, you know, for example, banks or financial institutes or car companies as a form of transaction. Would that
again, if you're talking about the currency, not like tokens or something like that, then currency is currency. Money is money. Don't try to make money off of just money, divorced from the real economy.
So we have exactly 1 minute, so please make the question very short, inshallah. And you might want to not use the mic. If you could just speak up, we can hear better probably without the mic.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Muhammad Al-Habi, and this is my second year attending Amjad. Jazakumullah khairan. I benefited a lot, so thank you, Sheikh Jamal and Sheikh Omar Saiman. My question is staking allowed to or not allowed to a certain degree? Because there are platforms like trading platforms like Coinbase that offer a reward system, like a 3% APY in return, an annual percentage yield, which I think is linked to interest. So I just want some clarification on that.
Any fixed return on what you have staked is basically riba. Interesting.
Okay. Jazakallah.
Inshallah, Sheikh Jamal finished right at 5:15. Allah Hafadak Sheikh, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless you and elevate you and protect you and reward you and all of the mashayikh who prepared these papers. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala keep us sufficed with halal and protect us from haram. Allahumma ameen. Barakallahu feekum. Inshallah ta'ala, we'll take a break. Sallallahu wa sallam, barak ala nabiyyina Muhammad.